We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker.
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
You ready?
Yep.
All right, guys. Welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader, and I'm here with my man, Carl Frenz.
What's
Carl
up?
Frenz works... My man is from Tormek. He's the American guy in Tormek. He was here with me last time in Sweden, and he is my guy, and we're looking forward to speaking with him. Before we get to that, let's just take care of a little business. First things first, I want to thank my friends at Broadback Grindworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This grinder is for knife makers or metal workers, or are you removing material? This is the one for you. And if you go to BroadbackGrindworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% discount on everything, the grinders, attachments, parts. Love these guys. Go to BroadbackIronworks.com and get yourself squared away. Next are my friends at Evenheat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-chillin.com. You got to get involved. If you need that tap control, you need that solid state drive, if you're hardening knives, hammers, tools, glass, ceramics, you got to get yourself an Evenheat. Stop playing. Tempering, hardening, stainless, light stuff, little stuff, big stuff. You need a specific temperature, get yourself an Evenheat. Go to evenheat-kiln.com. I want to thank my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. That's maritimeknifesupply.com for all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, heat treating ovens, all that stuff. They're fantastic. Lawrence is unbelievable, and he has got a pile of steel and all that stuff you need. I love the 1084. The 1080 hex bar he has, I've been making integrals with it. He's got a lot of great stuff for knife makers, and he is a knife maker. So he knows what you need. So go to maritimeknifesupply.com, and when you get a 10-pack of abrasive belts, you get 10% off. I highly suggest getting the Norton Razor Star, the yellow 36. I'm with you. Next are my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Stabirel knife, finishing vise, and more. Their vises are built in the heart of Texas, and they're designed to take your handle finishing to a whole new level. Trojan Horse Forge also teaches classes. Go to TrojanHorseForge.com. They also sell knives. And if you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 when you get the Stabirel knife finishing vise, you're going to get 10% off everything. I love my guys at Trojan Horse Forge, and I'm looking forward to more from them. I'm with them. Next are my friends at Baker Forge. I got big news from Baker Forge. BakerForge.com, Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram for all of your... copper mice, sand mice, bronze mice, all the different exotic steels are easy to work with, easy to use, and they're easy to finish. And I got big news in regards to finishing. Guys, this is insane. So I got a message from Koi that starting April 18th, there is a pre-orders for two new versions of Gator Piss. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, Gator Piss. Now, you were used to Gator Piss number one. That's G-A-T-O-R-P-I-S-S. Gator short for alligator. Piss is short for urine. Now you have two more variations, and I'm going to explain. There's regular Gator Piss, which is unbelievable. And there's Gator Piss Heavy, which is a unique variation, the original blend, but much stronger with powerful etches designed for high volume repeatability on most high carbon steels and excels in production etching environment. Great for the blackout etches on Damascus and on monosteel. The next one is Gator Piss Max. This is the etchant for stainless steel Damascus knives. Stainless steel Damascus knives. So designed for high contrast and deep etches in one go. I guess you don't need muriatic acid anymore. No need to heat, no need to gas out your shops like the LastPass etching methods. Get a jaw-dropping etch with high contrast like never before. Makes etching stainless. Okay? So you have the Gator Piss, which is fantastic. You have the Gator Piss Heavy, and you got to get the Gator Piss Max. So pre-orders start on April 18th, and they're priced the same as OG Gator Piss. There will be a discount on the pre-orders only. All right? So go to BakerForge.com, and then you put in the promo code FULLBLAST, and then you're going to get what you get. And I'm very impressed with this stuff. This stuff just showed up. It's going to be awesome. I do use a lot of Damascus, stainless Damascus, and I'm looking forward to checking out all these different things. So with that said, you can get the regular Gator Piss, among other things, at Texas Farrier Supply. My buddies at Texas Farrier Supply have a pile of stuff. If you're a farrier, blacksmith, bladesmith, however you identify, you can get 10% off everything at Texas Farrier Supply when you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10. 10% off, you get yourself some of that Rhino Wet. Get yourself some of that, get a pair of tongs, get yourself a hammer, whatever you need. TexasFarrierSupply.com. Next are my friends at Total Boat, TotalBoat.com. They make adhesive paints, primers, polishing compounds for boaters and DIYers. They understand they need your projects to go smoothly. I use their two-part epoxy specifically for all my handle scales. I love it. I use the UV cure resin. I use their CA glue, which is dynamite. And if you go to totalboat.com/fullblast, that's the affiliate code that gets you a discount and gets me street cred, which is all I really care for at this point. So that's that. Go get yourself some Total Boat. I can't say enough great things about Total Boat. Another thing I can only say great things about is my friends at Gil Hansen & Sons, that G.L._Hansen & Sons. They're the makers of G-Carta, which is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed under epoxy with pressure and heat. Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm, G-Carta, Pheasant, Colorama, Hoopla. Stuff's awesome. If you go to gcarta.bigcartel.com, you can check out what the fuss is about. I love these guys, and the reason why I love these guys is the stuff is really awesome. It's beautiful to work with. It's great handled material, and my customers are starting to ask for it by name. So definitely check out what's going on over GL Hansen & Sons, or you can follow them on Instagram, g.l._Hansen & Sons on Instagram. It's really fun. Next, my friends at Nordic Edge. It's Nordic Edge on Nordic_Edge on Instagram, nordicedge.com.au. They are a great company in Australia that supplies tools for knife makers, woodworkers, for leather workers, spoon carving, and they also teach classes. It is a great resource, and they're run by some of the best dudes around. Bjorn is unbelievable. Sausage Man Forge is unbelievable. That's Jamie. He's unbelievable. These guys are real great dudes, and I would highly suggest you checking out what is going on over at Nordic Edge, because they have the guidance to accelerate your creativity and the tools, products, and supplies to help you manifest your ideas. NordicEdge.com.au. And if you're in Australia, stop playing. I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives, suppliers of superior abrasive products for every application, knife making, metal fabrication, glass fab, floor sanding, crankshaft, belts, grinding, cutting discs, flap discs, surface grinding, surface conditioning belts. It's unbelievable. I've been getting some stuff from them, and I'm amazed at the variety they have, and their pricing is great. And they are going to give you 10% off at checkout if you go to phoenixabrasives.com. Use the promo code FB10. FB10 gets you 10% off, and their prices are amazing. And with things going on in the world, prices are going up. They're holding tight, and they're giving us 10% off. So I appreciate the hell out of Phoenix Abrasives, and I think you should too. And last, but certainly not least, my guy is here. I want to talk about Tormek, celebrating 50-plus years of being in business. They got the Black TA sharpening system. Go to Tormek.com. Go follow Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. They are an amazing company. I love Tormek for a number of reasons. One is where it came from. It came from humble beginnings, trying to figure out ways in which to sharpen the homeowner's chisels and axes without having to lug out a giant wheel and all this stuff. And the fact is Tormex are amazing because you can have repeatability in the way you sharpen. It's not just for chisel guys anymore. All you chisel guys have been hoarding this whole thing. Knife guys, this is the one for you. I think I have like 4 or 5. Carl, we're going to have to talk about that. I might have 4. I think I have 5 Tormex. And I'm getting made fun of, but that's okay. 50 years in being in business, Tormex is unbelievable. I love what's going on, and I love this company, and I love the fact that they think about the customer first. So if without any further ado, you can go to Tormec_sharpening on Instagram. You go to Tormec.com, and my man, Carl Frenz, is here from Tormec. Carl, how are you?
I am doing wonderful. It is good to be back talking to my man, Jeff Ader.
Dude. You're a new father. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been quite an experience. It's been good. You know, people, they try and prepare you for all that it entails. And it's kind of like it doesn't quite do the job until you actually get in the weeds with it. So
what would you say? Magic. What would you say your biggest surprise is?
I think the whole having to eat every like 2 to 3 hours, even overnight. People say like, oh, you don't sleep much. And it's kind of like, oh, well, our baby's going to be better. But I didn't realize it was like, oh, you have to set an alarm to make sure that you feed the baby every 2 to 3 hours.
How old is your daughter now?
So she just, this Sunday will be 8 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. She had quite the battle in the NICU the first month. So we missed a good part in the beginning. Super scary, but we're here now. We're healthy and we're growing. So that's all we can ask for.
Yeah, I was really, my wife and I were really pulling for you. You know, Hillary and I are such huge fans of you in general. And we were really pulling for you. You know, I know your daughter was struggling, was fighting. She was a premature. Is that really what it was? Or?
It was a birth injury, so she was full term, but there were some complications during the birth, so it was quite traumatic, to say the least.
Of course. We were sending our best vibes, and Hillary was saying, do you hear anything? Do you hear that? Is everything okay? And then when you finally came home, you sent me a picture of you feeding your baby with a Fader knife shirt on, and I was just like, look at this. Everybody's fine. if you could hang out in a Fader knife, if you could figure out what clothes to wear, and you make choices, if it's obviously it's a little bit less stressful.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Every time I wear that shirt, my wife is like, oh, you got to wear that more. I love that shirt, so I appreciate the shirt.
All right, well, I got to send you another one. But here's the problem. I send you another one, and it's the same color, then your wife's just going to think you're just wearing the same shirt over and over again.
Yeah, but I have the same shirt, Tormec shirt, that I wear all the time, and I have to remind everybody, you know, I didn't wear this one yesterday. It was the same shirt, just a different just a different one.
Well, to the listener, if you go back last summer, I got invited. My wife and I were invited to come to Sweden to hang out with Carl and the whole Tormec crew at the Tormec facility, and we recorded a whole episode in Sweden, which was a blast to me. I was terrified, frankly, because I've never had to record an episode in person, but especially not in a studio that that I'd never been to before. So it was a lot of fun, and we had such a great time in Sweden with you guys.
Yeah, that was a blast. We still talk about it. You know, we had so much fun, and it was so good being in person and being able to connect and, you know, share learnings and things like that. We loved it.
I'm amazed. How are things going with Tormec?
Yeah, I mean, things are rolling. It's really fun. I feel like we have a good kind of strategy in place. And you know, like you mentioned earlier, we always try to focus on the customer and excelling in that front. And that's kind of why we say like, welcome to the Tormec family when you purchase a Tormec, because that's kind of how we view it. You know, it was humble beginnings, family company, and now each person that at gets a Tormec, they kind of get welcomed into that family. So you know, we have the forums and things like that, so really collaborative, and it's super fun to just kind of see what people do with their machines.
Just to kind of recap, what I was amazed at when we came to the Tormec facility was the story of the what is his name, how do you pronounce the owner's name?
Torgny.
Torgny.
The founder. Yep.
He, when he founded it, they created this room. It's like a museum to Tormek. And the most amazing part is when you look at the, they have all the original prototypes for the Tormek. This is a guy, he was a maker. And he built this, he had his dad had this giant, like in a lot of Swedish homes where they were sharpening chisels or sharpening the axes or something like that. He had this giant stone wheel that it took more than one person to use, and he wanted to figure out a way to allow his dad to sharpen his chisels or his axes because he's getting older and he didn't have to schlep this monstrous stone everywhere and then have someone turn it. And he came up with this idea to have this small wheel that's turned by the chuck of the of a electric drill. And the amazing part is you can see, when you see all the different prototypes and you see where it came from, you see that the humble beginnings came from this guy who just had this idea to kind of figure out a way to help his dad. And he, it's just like a, it's the classic story of figuring out a problem and then kind of figuring out the easiest way to do it.
Yeah, and it's so cool because, I mean, he was a one-man show for so long, and he would go to, you know, trade shows and just pop up a table and try and do demos and try and talk to anybody that would, you know, take the time to listen for a couple minutes. And it's crazy to see what it's, you know, not only the machine has evolved to, but what the company has evolved to. It's quite inspiring to see his story.
It is incredibly inspiring because I remember seeing a picture, and I think he went to some event, and I think he just had like some milk crates, and he put his Tormek on these milk crates.
Yeah.
And there's this picture of him just like, you know, trying to figure it out. And this is like, you know, 50 years ago, it's the 1970s. And it is the story, is the true story of kind of building on an idea. But one of the things is you know, going to Tormek now and being able to see all these things, you still, the fact that Tormek really makes sure that all the fittings and all the, if you have a Tormek from 45 years ago, you know, the wheels, everything's going to fit for the stuff you buy now. So it's, you're really, you are taking care of your customers, and you're kind of creating this concept of not having planned obsolescence, which I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah, I think that the plan kind of is, you know, if you're going to sell a high quality product, you know, you don't want it to be obsolete in a couple of years. That just doesn't seem fair. So we always try and, you know, use the best materials, and everything's made in Sweden, you know, really well thought out. Some of our, you know, manufacturers are very close by that we're able to visit and, you know, actually talk to a person in person. So it's really cool. I mean, it's definitely, I feel like, can be a good example for other companies that kind of in this space to look at.
How did you get involved with them?
Yeah, so I have a videography background. So when COVID hit, I had lost my job, unfortunately. And so I was kind of going full time in that space. So I was doing weddings and things like that. And, you know, I kind of wanted my weekends back. Me and my wife, you know, my girlfriend at the time, we were looking to, you know, start a family at some point. And so I was like, oh, I just can't be doing, you know, weekends. Like our schedules were flip-flopped.
Right.
So I just kind of went back into the old, you know, application phase. And I saw Tormek, and I was really just impressed with the job description, because it wasn't only a marketing role. It was marketing with content creation, which, you know, I was in marketing before COVID. So it just seemed like a good fit. And I interviewed, and I as soon as the interview got done, I got my car, and I don't think anyone knows this, so here we go. But I got my car, and I started crying, and I was like, I need this. Like, this is the perfect job for me. And after 3 months of working there, you know, I make the joke, like, I want to retire here. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And it's such a good company to work for. Everyone's so great. And, you know, they really, like, elevate us and challenge us and let us use our own, you know, creative skills and come up with new ways to show off the machine. And it's a blast. It is. It's great.
So was it always remote, or when, I mean, obviously Tormek, the facility is in Sweden and you were at the time in Chicago. So was it a remote job, or were you going to an office, or?
Yeah. So we have an office. It's in a suburb of Chicago. Lombard is the town. But they opened that office in 2019, I want to say. So we have an office. There's a couple of us there, and we kind of take care of the U.S. market. But we work really closely with the team in Sweden. So before that, I think they just did it all kind of remote from Sweden. And, you know, they would come for trade shows and things like that. But more recently is when they opened the office.
So just out of curiosity, this is a stupid question, but because there's 7 hours difference, does your day start? And now you're in Texas. You're not even in Chicago anymore. So, it's 7 hours for me. So that means it's like 8 hours for Chicago. It's like 1 hour difference, right? So was there like a timing? Do they have to do their meetings at different times or?
Yeah, honestly, it works well for my creative brain, how it's structured with the time difference, because all our meetings in the morning, they're all in the morning. So it's kind of like you crank out your meetings in the morning, and then the afternoon I can work on whatever we went through in the meetings, you know, and my brain kind of afternoon is when I feel a little bit more creative, and the morning is kind of more the meetings and the mundane stuff that you got to get out of the way, and then it's go time once it hits noon.
You need to warm up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So when was your first trip out to Sweden? They must have said, okay, we got to bring this guy out here to see what it's like.
Yeah, so I'm the only marketing guy in the U.S., so the rest of the team's in Sweden. So I think at the eight-month mark is when I first went over there. And, you know, I've been having the virtual calls with them, and that's all good. But, man, being in person, we brought out the whiteboard, and we came up with content ideas, and it was super collaborative. And it's, you know, even now, like looking back, just that first trip, I feel like they're my family. Like, you know, they've with my daughter and everything, like super involved, like checking in on me and super supportive. Getting goosebumps as I talk about that. But
I'm not surprised. Just I'm going to interrupt you by saying that they love you over there. I mean, the whole everybody is fond. If you don't, just to let you guys know, you don't know what Carl, he's a tall guy, good looking, super happy, super friendly. One of the friendliest guys you're ever going to meet. And the people at Cormac are all over this guy. And I'm not saying anything other than just like he knows people in the factory. He knows everyone's coming up to old Carl. You're bulletproof over there.
Yeah, I mean, I life's too short to make enemies and things like that. So I just, everyone love everyone, and you know, we'll all get through it together.
I was pretty impressed. You guys let me sit through a couple of marketing meetings, and I really was impressed at how you guys were going about it. And I think that one of the things I'm amazed at is that the Swedish headquarters, they're very like supportive of you guys. Especially, you got very involved in TikTok, and like your whole just your TikTok content like blew up over there. Right.
Yeah. We're at like 30,000, just over 30,000 followers, which it was kind of one of those things. We were like not really sure, like, you know, what are we gonna do with TikTok? And when I first started, that was kind of like the first thing. I was like, oh, are you guys on TikTok? And you know, we weren't at the time, and we kind of like thought about it a little bit, and we were like, you know what, let's just try it. And it was kind of like our playground. It was like, let's throw some content that maybe isn't so polished. You know, as much as, you know, we have our YouTube channel that has like the trainings and things like that. And then our Instagram, obviously, but yeah, we were like, let's just like throw some stuff on TikTok and see if it hits. And, you know, we did like ASMR content, satisfying videos. And I mean, it's crazy. The engagement on there is crazy. We get so many messages daily, comments, likes,
really?
Shares. Yeah. It's pretty cool, and it's really fun to kind of see. It's not only in the U.S. I mean, we're getting messages from all over the world. So it's really cool to see like how global this is.
The whole social media has become so interesting, and the more interesting part is there's like a new currency, and the currency isn't likes. The currency is engagement and views. So it almost doesn't even matter if someone clicks on it or says a message. I was just looking at Fader Knives analytics, and we had 350,000, you know, views and engagements over the past 30 days, which is crazy. But the funny thing is like I get some videos that got like, you know, a couple hundred likes, but then it's got like 20,000 views. And it's like the engagement is the new currency.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was just talking to some people about this, brainstorming just ideas. And it's crazy that we've been calling it the death of the follower.
Right.
You know, a couple of years ago, it was like, oh, you got to build a big following. And, you know, if you don't have a following, like, you can't build a business. But I think TikTok specifically has kind of changed the game, where they have the For You page, and now Instagram's kind of, you know, doing that, and even YouTube Shorts, but they're curating content for the user. So you're not really seeing content from the people you follow. You're seeing new curated content from people you don't follow.
Right.
So like you said, like the views and the shares, that is like become kind of what everyone's after, which is so interesting in terms of strategy, because it's a different way to navigate now, because you have to kind of change how you're making the content.
I've been talking about, you know, I've been coming up with, I've been talking about the fact that, you know, been saying this is the currency. I was using the word currency. I was like, engagement is currency. Views are currency. It isn't about people having this, you know, it's the eyes or, you know, just somebody to look at it. And I was watching the Knicks last night, and we got to talk about basketball because I'm miserable. And there was, because we stream TNT through Max. So they're doing all these videos they're doing all these commercials for these things on HBO Max. And they had this new, a commercial for, I guess, Logan Paul and his family are going to do a TV show. And regardless of whatever you feel about it, he said, it isn't about, all he says, it's all about engagement. It doesn't matter what you do. He's like, you don't need, it's engagement is everything. It doesn't matter if someone says something good or bad. You don't have to be positive or negative. It just has to be, something's got to be seen. And it was really interesting because I was just like, all right, well, that definitely tracks with this whole idea of like, it's about views. It isn't about people being engaged. But what was interesting to me, going back to when I was at that marketing meeting, was they were asking about how we have to figure out ways in which there's a conversion rate from the engagement on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook to the conversion rate to people buying stuff, because that's what we're having a problem with in Fader Knives. Is we get a pile of views, we're collaborating with all these different people, and it's how do we convert people over to being customers?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think, you know, the Paul brothers, they're just genius marketers. Like if Jake Paul is boxing Mike Tyson, you know, you have one side who are Jake Paul fans, they want to see him win, and then you have people who hate him and they want to see him get knocked out. So he kind of was able to capitalize on all that.
Whether you like him or not.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to watch because whether, you know, especially with boxing, like you're going to either root for him or you're going to root for him to lose. So like everyone's going to tune in. But when you apply it to, yeah, like Fader Knives, it's interesting because the content mix, you know, you can post a ton of viral videos, but now you're getting a lot of people who maybe aren't good leads. But so that's where you kind of mix in. So you'll have viral content and then you'll have evergreen content that's always applicable. And that's what gets people to stay. And you know, a little bit more, conversion focused. So you get the viral content to get people to kind of scratch their head, be like, what is this? And then once they go to your page and they see, oh, this guy is serious. Like he makes awesome knives. That is what's going to actually drive the sale. So it's a way of balancing that type of content with each other. That's kind of the hard part, but the rewarding part.
I have an interesting story. I went to, on Monday, I got invited to, well, I get invited. I had to pay to go to this conference in Philadelphia. When I say I got invited by the PR company and they sent me the bill for the ticket. So that wasn't, when I say I was invited, I paid to go to this thing regardless.
Sounds way cooler though.
Yeah, it sounds way cooler if I say I was invited, because then it makes it sound like I was invited to be a panelist or something. I certainly wasn't. So I went to this chef's conference in Philadelphia, which was really interesting, and it was really networking, but then there were these panel discussions. And what was really interesting was there was this panel discussion, and there was this cookbook. A guy was very involved in cookbooks. And what he's saying is the biggest problem now with cookbooks is – and one of the big problems – I was surprised that this problem came up, but I think it's applicable – what he said was a lot of book companies or publishing houses are giving advances, big advances, to influencers, TikTok people. And the guy says, if I see one more TikTok cookbook, I'm going to lose my mind. He says, because the problem is, that's who these publishing houses are giving their advances to, is TikTok food people. And the problem is when you see, 8 out of 10 of these books are terrible. That's what he said, number one. And number two is they're not, the publishing houses are using these influencers thinking, the guy's got 3 million viewers. That's just going to automatically convert into sales. And what happens is it's totally not. Like, these influencers are not selling anything, so they're wasting their money basically, because and they're just sending out more. They're using more and more and more, and they feel like at some point these influencers are going to hit, and that is what I found to be very interesting, because their conversion rate is based off the idea these publishers are thinking, we're just going to have this influencer make a book, and then his 3 million followers are going to just buy the book. And it's just not happening. And the books are terrible.
Yeah, I think that type of content is so tricky, because I think a lot of people, they want the recipe, but they don't care who made it, why they made it. So if it's shareable content, people are sending to their wives or husbands, let's make this for dinner tonight. And they watch it once, they make it themselves, and they go, okay, cool, on to the next thing. And yeah, it's interesting to use those platforms too for that stuff, because I was just thinking about this the other day. But when are you on TikTok? Like, you're scrolling. Okay, it's probably you're in the bathroom, you're waiting in line at the DMV. Like, it's all quick consumption. They're not actually there to. It's harder to convert, because they're not actually there to say purchase a full cookbook. They're just there to kind of kill time.
Right. Well, number one, I have to say that I cut TikTok loose a while ago, just because it just got very dark for me. Like, I got really number one, I felt like the demographic were not the demographic to buy culinary knives. And number two is I don't know what happened. Next thing you know, I'm in this rabbit hole of people standing up to the police when they get pulled over. And I'm like, what happened? What did I do? What button did I press? And now all of a sudden this is all I'm going to get is people defying the police. I'm like, Jesus, this is so dark. And I can't handle one more. Let me see your ID. I don't have to give you my ID. Let me see your ID. I want to talk to your supervisor. I cannot take one more. I was just like, I got to cut the whole platform loose. And I was just like, forget it. I'm over. I'm out.
Yeah, it's hard. You watch one video for a little bit too long, and now your whole feed is all that.
Oh my God. I don't have to show you my ID. My lawyer says I don't have to show you my, oh my God. I was just like, and my wife was just like, what are you watching? Like, cause she hears all these these terrible interactions. These very, stressful. Like, there's stress involved. And I'm like, I don't know what happened, frankly. So I had to cut it loose completely.
Well, then before you know it, you're scrolling and you're like, whoa, that was 45 minutes?
Yeah, it's crazy. That's why they call it doom scrolling, because it's totally crazy. But at the same time, right now we're doing a collaboration with this friend. His name's Bob, and I've had him on the podcast, Bob Morano. He's got his Instagram and TikTok is Every Day is Feast Day. And he was at the shop yesterday. I've known him when he had hardly any followers, and he's just a Hudson Valley guy near me. Really, really appreciate his content. I really appreciate his the idea that he's making simple food and he's trying to give you easy directions and he's not trying to overcomplicate things. He's not talking down to you. He's a professional chef, and I loved his attitude. Like, his attitude is my attitude in terms of let's not make it overcomplicated. I want you to make dinner with a nice knife, and then I want the knife to look good. So we started to do this. After a while, I said, well, let me send you a knife. Just use my knife. He's been unbelievable. And we do a lot of collaborations with other knife makers, other chefs. And this is the one where there's this very organic connection between what he does and what I do. And it's fantastic. And I'm seeing a conversion rate already, just because he uses my knife and he's organically really trying to be as helpful as he can. And it just becomes this difficult way to navigate how to use social media you know, correctly and then focusing in on a business.
Yeah. And you know what, Jeff, I know you kind of hyped me up a little bit, so I'll hype you up too. But you know, we always go back and forth and, you know, you're the man. No, you're the man. And
you are the man, Carl. But, you are the man.
Thank you. All those people in Sweden
thought you were the man. I mean, it wasn't even they thought you were the man. You were the man. They were everybody in the packing plant in the plant were high fiving you. All these people, you were the man. You were the mayor.
Oh, they're the mans too. Everyone's the man.
They're the mans.
But no, I mean, we still talk about you all the time. You know, they're like, oh, check it in, like, oh, how's Jeff doing? So. But no, I mean, going back to that, the collaboration you did with your friend, I mean, in terms of business, I mean, that is such a good play. Like people, you know, like you're a good person, like people like you, people want to buy from people that they like. And that's where I think the Paul brothers, it's kind of hard. It's like, you know, there are a lot of people who buy their stuff. Don't get me wrong, but it's harder to build a business, you know, making people in the world not like you and being, you know, controversial. But if you're, you know, Jeff Fader selling awesome knives and you're an awesome person, I mean, that right there is the sell. Like your brand as Jeff Fader, like that can sell knives, you know.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. Let's just hope so. Because I mean, it's just like, you know, we're trying to diversify too. The hardest part is like now I'm 51. And I have a business partner since day one, and I have people who work for me, and then we've hired a PR department, and we're trying to diversify because it's just like, I went back to this chef's convention. They were talking about like what restaurants can do because the margins are so small, and what they're talking about is the fact that social media is unreliable. It's unreliable because the changes are made and they make decisions and people, you know, for local business, it's different. And the whole thing is it's become very interesting. But I will say it has really allowed me to connect with people that I never expected to connect with a community of knife makers and also like companies like yours, you know, being able to just kind of connect with you guys and find communities outside of the demographic of my business, which is always very surprising.
Yeah, I think that's such a good way to go about it too. You know, it's not, you know, you're not doing anything cutting corners just to make a dollar. You're doing it for the love of making the knives, and you're, you know, making these genuine connections. And you know, I think that's definitely clear in everything that you do. So, and I think that's kind of what we do here at Tormek too. Is like, We're sharpeners, we're sharpening experts. If you don't want to use a Tormek and you're going to, you know, hand sharpen, it's something you've done forever. Like at the end of the day, like a sharp tool is all we care about. So if you can get it sharp that way, totally cool. We're just, you know, providing a solution that is maybe easier for somebody that doesn't have the background in sharpening.
I will say one thing about Tormek that because now we get on Knife Talk and on here, I get so many questions about sharpening knives, and there's so many of these gadgets out there, and these gadgets are all like, I mean, one is crazier than the next. You know, one looks like a praying mantis and one looks like a, you know, barrel and all these things, and they're magnets and all this stuff. There's, you know, when I talked to, I actually gave Bob the T1 is the bigger of the kitchen ones, right?
The T2 is the bigger one.
I gave him my T2 to try out because I was like, try it out, beat the brakes off and see what you think. And I put it in his car and he was happy to, he was really excited to kind of give it a whirl. And what the amazing thing about Tormek is when you break it down, it's not revolutionizing the concept. It's simplifying. And I was talking to someone, I was just like, listen, if you were to use whetstones, you got to move your knife up and down and whatever. With Tormek, it's moving for you. I said, it's not really like, you're not reinventing the wheel. It's just you're packaging something that's much more easier to use and tried and true, which is there's water filled and it's using these stones and they're just turning and you can change the stones. It's easier to, it's easier to tune up your stones than it is to tune up a flat whetstone. I can tell you that for free. Easier than using the truing tools for the Tormek. I just love the fact that you haven't like tried to come up with some. It's not a fancy new trendy, cross your fingers, hope it works, you know, method. It's like using traditional styles and then just packaging it for someone to use at home.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think, too, a lot of people look at it at first glance and they're like, whoa, like with our Tormek T8, the biggest machine, you know, people see it at trade shows and things like that. And, you know, they might initial response is like, ooh, that looks intimidating. That looks, you know, hard to use. You know, and then we'll give a quick demo and they're like, whoa, wait a second. That was actually insanely easy. And now I have the same edge angle across the whole bevel. Like, what? I've never had that before. So
yeah,
it's one of those things that now in our content, we're trying to, you know, help show like, no, it actually is quite simple once you kind of break it down.
Yeah, that's, but at the same time, but like I said, it's not as if you're jumping through hoops to catch trends. Like you're really giving tried and true. I mean, it is an amazing machine. And I'll tell you why I started using them. And it was before I met you guys and Sebastian. I know I met you guys all in Barcelona when I was down with Tomer at Florentine Kitchen Knives a couple years ago. But I had heard about Tormek through a friend of mine back early when I started making knives. His name was Aaron Goff, and he was using Tormek's. He's an awesome knife maker out of Canada, Australian. He comes on here every so often. He's like the king of YouTube knife makers. And I call him everybody's illegitimate father. Because he's like, his videos have like taught people how to become knife makers. And I believe that he was the first person I saw use a Tormek. And then I got one because to two people that I really trusted in terms of business, you were using them. Tomer Botner had three. And then my friend Jonathan Porter, Doghouse Forge, he had three. And those two guys are like on my Mount Rushmore of if I have a real business question or a knife making question. They're like, the two of them are very, very smart. And I noticed that two guys that I really respected in the business, not just as knife makers, but as like business people, if they're using not only one, but three, then there must be something there. So I was just like immediately, I bought one and then I bought a second one. And then you guys were generous enough to send me the third. But I just want you to know that, like, it was really like, it wasn't about what you said or wasn't about what people I saw online. It was like guys that I trust are using them and they don't know each other, but they were like, their whole system was in place with the Tormek. And I was like, all right, these are smart guys. Obviously they know what they're doing and maybe I should listen.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's super fun to hear stories like that just because there's just, you know, there's people who have Tormek that we have no idea. And then we find one out. We're like, oh, he uses a Tormek. That is amazing. Like, it's cool. There, you know, there's people across the U.S. that you're like, oh, there's a ex-professional football player from the NFL that is a woodworker now and has a Tormek. Like, it just like cool stories like that we just like love to hear.
Well, that, you know, for the woodworking people, I call them chisel people. It makes perfect sense. I actually helped sell one to a friend of mine down the road from me because he's a carpenter and he hates sharpening his chisels on a whetstone. He says I suck at it. I hate it. And I got him to get a Tormek and he got a Tormek and he's just like thrilled with it. I told him, I said, you can use mine. Try mine out and use mine. This is not a problem. This is just a fact. You got to practice. Like, you have to figure out your system in place. And then some knives, like ones with like a built-in bolster, that might be a little bit trickier. You have to kind of work around. But it's just a little bit of practice, and they've changed the way I make knives.
Yeah, it's crazy. I actually, when I first started, you know, I was not handy at all. Like, I'm a creative, I'm a video guy. So when it was kind of like, oh, like, would you be comfortable going to trade shows and demoing? I was like, I don't know. So it definitely, like you said, definitely takes some practice. But, you know, I spent a couple days, you know, working on each machine, and it's kind of like similar principles, whether you're doing knives, chisels, gouges, very similar principles. And then it's kind of like you practice for a couple hours and then it clicks and you have it. And you're like, oh, wait a second. Like, this time felt a lot easier than the last time. And then you just kind of build off that, kind of like any skill.
Yeah.
And the, you know, yeah, like the beginning might take a little bit longer because you're learning and maybe having to watch a video while you're doing it. But once you get it down, I mean, you should be saving a ton of time sharpening your tools.
It's insane. I mean, but for me, it was more about I was using belts because I was, you know, at the time I'm sharpening 15 to 20 knives at a time from zero, not refixing an edge. It was more along establishing an edge. And I felt like it was faster to use the belts. The problem was I was taking too much off the heel. And then all of a sudden the profile of my knife would change. And it was very inadvertent. I didn't even realize it. And then the Tormek is moving so slow and it's waterstone that it really kind of didn't take as much of material off. I don't want to, this is not supposed to sound like an infomercial, Carl. I just want you to know.
Yeah. So
take me back to the first time you went to Sweden. What were you most surprised at in Sweden? And I have a story to tell you.
I think Sweden as a whole, it's super funny. But so I flew out of Chicago. You know, it's like an eight-hour flight to Copenhagen, and then a couple hours to Stockholm, and then two and a half hour bus ride to the headquarters. And I just remember, like, oh, cool, like going to Sweden. I went to Stockholm once when I was studying abroad, and I was like, oh, it's just like a city, whatever. And then, so I was like, what is it going to be like when I leave the city in Sweden? Like, it must look super European. And so when I get to the town, I'm looking at all the buildings, and I'm like, wait a second, why does this look like Wisconsin?
That's funny.
So yeah. I sent some Snapchats to my friends back home, and I was like, oh, I made it to Sweden. Like, this is a dream. Like, I love this. And then they were saying the same thing. Did your plane just fly in circles for 12 hours and then just land in Milwaukee? So, I mean, that was my initial, like, whoa, it doesn't feel so different. And there's a lot of English too, so that also helps.
We when we were coming back from I guess it was the second night, and the CEO drove Hillary and I back to from where the Tormek was to the hotel, which was like, what was it, you think about 20-minute drive, something like that. The most amazing thing is we're having this nice conversation. He was.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano, or pick up bass guitar, or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil, that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Fantastic. And Samuel was unbelievable. Such a sweet guy, really careful, caring, and just it was really amazing watching the CEO with everybody in at Formec. She's driving us home, and we start to, you know, just making small talk. And we see on the signs, we see these moose signs. You know, you're driving through, you know, the roads, and you're seeing these watch out for moose. So I'm making small talk. And I said, Samuel, have you ever seen any moose? And he goes, no, we've never seen any moose. Never seen any moose at all. 5 minutes later, we're passing by a field. And I said, there are two moose out in that field right there. And he goes, no. And he looks and he says, and he stops the car, drives us down a dirt road to see if we can see him. And there they are, two moose. He says, I've never, ever seen moose in Sweden before. And 5 minutes after you asked if there are any moose, we saw two in a field. But he had to, like, he had this really nice car, and he's like, you know, stops short and then gets us down this like dirt path, and he's just like, he's got to get closer to see if he can see these moose. And it was hilarious, but it was just like very, it was funny. He was so excited. He'd never seen moose before. He just said, I never saw a moose. And there are two.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's a couple guys, that one guy specifically from Norway, and he would send me pictures like, oh, traffic jam, and like he would like zoom in with his phone, and yep, it's just a couple moose crossing the street, nothing to see here.
Next thing I wanted to talk to you about, because one of the things I loved about Tormek was the event that I went to, which was the Tormek celebrating the artists using the Tormek in general. I embrace technology. I mean, we just talked about social media, and that's, I mean, embracing technology. How do you feel about, and you're a new father, you're getting ready to get into the real parenting, which is going to take a, you know, once she starts talking and she starts, you know, you start to kind of teach her things and she starts to learn stuff and you start to kind of get her on her way. What do you feel? Are you optimistic for the future? Are you optimistic about where she's going to go in life? I have a 20-year-old. We're always just like constantly talking about what do you think you want to do and where do you want to go and what should we be focusing on? Are you optimistic for the future?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to not be. I'm kind of optimistic to a fault. And yeah. I think it's kind of, if you're not, you know, it kind of it leads to some sadness. So I think, you know, my toxic trait is my toxic positivity.
Oh my God. Listen to you, Carl. Toxic, yeah. Carl.
Yep.
His toxic trait is being too nice.
Yep. Can't
too
help
happy.
It.
He can't help it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think sometimes it gives me blind spots. I think I always think too highly of things and people and stuff. And, you know, so for me, you know, I'm super optimistic. And, you know, I think, you know, things seem crazy, but I think you look back as long as time goes, you know, people think like, oh, it's not like it was in the 70s, and then the 80s come, and then they're, oh, it's not like it was in the 80s. Right. You know, I think it's kind of this endless cycle of, you know, we're, you know, the end is near, things like that. So I think, you know, I try and avoid all that stuff and think of all the good in life.
Well, what's interesting about this podcast is a lot of the people that I talk to are all makers or creators or creative people. Or I don't like to just say creative. Oh, he's very creative. Creative is one thing. Executing creativity is a whole different level. I told a story that, like, when I was in the restaurant business, I had this idea. My friends and I were walking in the street, and we wanted to eat street food, and we were in Chinatown, and I was eating this container of lo mein. And then walking in the street with chopsticks, eating lo mein, I was like, this sucks. Like, you can't really walk. It's not like a hot dog. You know, a hot dog you can walk. It's directional, too. But, like, and I thought, I need to come up with something that weaves noodles into some sort of cone or something like that. And I came up with the idea of the noodle loom. And it was like, it was all about the name. It just really didn't do anything. And I thought, ah, we're going to need, someday we'll make the Noodle Loom. And it's creative, but I never made it. So being creative and executing creativity are two different things. You come up with this idea for a painting, and then you get out your paintbrushes, and then you execute it, and it comes out the way you want it. What I worry about is, we talk about AI a lot on this podcast, only just because I'm fascinated by it. I am completely concerned with jobs being taken by technology. I said this on the last episode, is when I was a younger kid, when Easy Pass is this little block, it's on your car, and then instead of having to go through a toll booth where you give, you know, money to the toll booth taker, you go through the radar, and it takes the money directly from your bank account, and then you don't have to stand in line. And I remember when it first came out, and I turned to my father, and I said, what are going to happen to all the toll booth takers? And he says, I don't know, they're going to have to find another job. And I constantly think about these technological efficiencies, and where is it going to leave people who depended on these particular jobs? And as technology grows, there's going to be a lot more things and efficiencies that are going to make jobs redundant. What I'm getting at is, what I appreciated about Tormek was they created this gallery that highlighted and celebrated the physical manifestation of creativity, and most likely with the tools they're using or used with a Tormek. But there was this, the way you guys set the gallery up was beautifully lit, and it was just like everything was just so, it felt like you were really celebrating the creative and physically, the people who were executing creativity.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that we value, and you know, hope doesn't go away, because like you said, like AI, you know, there's some pretty crazy thing. I mean, even like 3D printing, you're like, whoa, like,
right?
They can make stuff out of thin air, like what? But yeah, I think it's kind of like a pendulum. I think, you know, the super advanced AI, things like that, like, you know, it'll be integrated into what we do, you know, going forward, as, you know, a society and things like that. But I think it's a pendulum where I think people are kind of realizing that, like, wait a second, like, this was crafted. Like, there's definitely a ton of value in that. And, you know, I'm seeing, you know, when I talk to my friends, they're super disappointed in buying their, you know, cheap 3D printed furniture, you know, like tables and desks and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I hope, you know, that craftsmen continue to be craftsmen, and they don't, you know, give in to, you know, taking shortcuts and stuff, because something that's handmade, you know, we have some stuff in our house that we were like, yep, nope, we're not getting rid of this just because, you know, trends have changed. We're going to keep this because it's timeless. It'll last forever. High quality. I'm really hopeful that craftsmen will continue to do what they're doing now.
I'm thinking that the concept of executing humanity, and when I say executing humanity, I don't mean like AI is like the Terminator executing humanity, but I mean like manifesting the human touch. And I think that there's going to be things that are going to be uncopyable. I have this whole dislike of people using these AI filters. You know, you get a picture and it makes it look like the Studio Ghibli. You know about that?
Yeah, yep.
So I've talked about it yet last week with Riley. This Studio Ghibli, who hated AI, they make all these beautiful anime images and videos and movies and award-winning movies. And you can plug in a photograph, and then the AI will translate it into a very similar drawing from Studio Ghibli. I hate it. And I hate it because you're stealing people's experience and the time and energy, and the idea of what an artist does is it's not just like, I'm going to make an apple today. I'm going to make a painting of an apple today, and that's the first thing you did. Every piece should be a footstep to the next. And even like at the event where we were at Tormek for these incredible artisans, there was a guy who was making these handcrafted classic Swedish instruments that were just like mind-blowing. And he only makes a certain amount every year, and he obviously has taken him his whole life to kind of master it. And it's the idea of, like, this one leads to the next one, the next one leads to the next one, the next one leads to the next one. If you start to kind of take away people's experience and their mastery, what you're doing is you're eliminating and you're devaluing the time and energy it takes to, you know, to be a human artist. And it just gets me a little crazy, because I feel like if being creative, being an artist, is executing creativity, you can be creative and then you can let the executing of the creativity be on AI. And I'm completely 100% against it.
Yeah, and I see a lot, you know, in the video and photo space, like, it's like people, you know, learn how to be 3D animators and they spend, you know, 10 plus years in the field. Right. And now it's like AI, you click a button and now you have a 3D model of whatever you want, which, yeah, it definitely takes away from the craft, which is unfortunate. And I mean, if I was someone who dedicated my life to learning a skill, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, everyone else can do the exact same thing in 3 seconds, I would be pretty upset.
Well, it's changed these kinds of, we're saying AI, some people refer to it as not AI. It's not intelligence. It's deep learning software. So it's giving the ability to kind of learn. I use Siri because, I just woke her up. I ask her for, like, the box scores. Like, if I'm watching a game, I want to know how Carl Anthony Towns is doing. I can say, hey, Siri, how's Carl Anthony Towns doing? And what's his box scores? And she'll say he's got, like, whatever, you know, 20 points and these rebounds and assists. And that, to me, I find to be interesting. But I don't feel as though I'm taking away somebody's job. But when you, in the maker space, and I know your toxic trait is to be positive, and I want to be positive too. What I'm getting at is, I feel for the future, I feel that jobs for the future are, and careers for, like, my daughter, for your daughter, are going to be, you got to think about things that are irreplaceable, you know, things that are uncomputerable. And that is going to find, that's how you're going to be able to figure out a way to have happiness. My daughter is a sophomore in college, and she is, and we talk about this all the time, because she sees how, you know, jobs are being taken away from, with efficiencies and different types of stuff. So she's interested in environmental, urban and environmental policy, and which is really interesting. And there's a law school track possibly on my fingers and toes, and everything else is crossed, frankly. And I'm hoping for that. And we're talking about the idea of how do you prepare for the future in terms of creating an opportunity for yourself that's not going to be taken away by, you know, like, well, we have a program that'll do that.
Yeah, I think it's so hard too, because it's like, how, you can't really prepare. And it's like, you know, you might think, oh, I have it all figured out, I'm going to go this route and do this thing. And then all of a sudden technology catches up, and it's like, now right. I thought, oh, video editing, like, no computer could figure out how to do that. And now, like, there's certain softwares, you click a button and it does it all for you. But it's like, okay, then do you now integrate it? It's like, do you totally go against and not use it? Or do you use it to make your life easier? And now you are, you know, more valuable because you not only, like, are creative, but you also know how to use the AI properly. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, oh, how do you prepare for stuff like that?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because there have been opportunities for me and Fader Knives to invest in things that would allow me to not have to use suppliers that I really like using. Like, I have a woman who does the stencils for all the, you know, the logos and touch marks and stuff like that. I would have paid for a laser, you know, months and months ago. And the fact is she's really good. She's really fast. I usually roll it over in the price, and for, you know, in general. So I'm not losing. I don't lose money by using her, but it is allowing me to support a small business that I appreciate and that helps, you know, the fabric of my area. Same thing with the steel. I could get a water jet or a laser cutter and then do all the CNC work here. But the steel place that I get my steel from, I buy my steel from them anyway, and I really like them, and they're really good, and they really help me out, and I can get a call in, and if I need, you know, I'm able to do the water jet cutting with them, and I keep them in business too. Same thing with all my merch. That shirt you were wearing is not like one of these drop ship joints from that on online. I have a t-shirt guy down the street. I go in there. I have a nice conversation with him. We probably differ politically, but I like the fact that he is a local guy that I go in and I order the shirts. I pay for the shirts. I bring the boxes of shirts, and then I start sending them. I like the fact that I have this community of small businesses that I'm working with. And I feel as though it's really important to the fabric of commerce as opposed to, like, you know, just being this, like, cutthroat capitalist who's just trying to, like, you know. I'm trying to be conscientious. And you know what the funny thing is when I went to Tormek, it really opened my eyes to how a business can be run where people are happy to be there. They're supportive of the business that they're in. And the business also kind of is thoughtful and takes care of the employees. So you guys had a huge influence. Well, you didn't influence me as much as you kind of help bolster my personal opinion on how I should be running my business.
Yeah, I think if we, you know, kind of all do our part and do things like that, and, you know, Amazon is just so convenient, and you just, you know, you click a button and it delivers to your door the next day. I mean, that's sometimes same day, like, pretty appealing, but
yeah, super appealing.
But yeah, like you said, I mean, it sometimes it's better to take the harder route or the longer route, just to, you know, we're all here trying to make it. And, you know, if you can, like, maybe don't shop at big box store for everything, try and, you know, support the small guys. And we do stuff like that too. I mean, you can, you know, you can outsource like so many things these days. But like consciously making the choice to stick with people that you know and trust and want to support. You know, I think if more people did that, then we can, you know, keep fighting the good fight longer.
Hopefully. I mean, that's the idea. I mean, and the other thing is I do, as a custom knife maker who makes things with, humanity does this, I like the fact that I'm supporting other small businesses. I feel as though when you start to kind of like be a small business and then you cheap out and buy all these, you know, cheap stuff just to kind of you make your margins correct. I don't know. There's a little. I still see myself as a sculptor, and I like the greater good. Whether or not I behave correctly or not is a whole different ball game. But speaking of ball games, you are a big NBA fan.
Oh yeah.
How are you feeling about the Chicago Bulls?
Because
I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to give you toxic optimism.
I mean, they kind of hit a little hot streak there. They clinched a play-in game. The East, I mean, it's a weird, weird place right now. I feel like, I mean, the Celtics obviously are still dominant, but like, I don't know. I'd be scared of the Bulls. They're young. They're hungry. You know, once we got rid of LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, I thought, oh no, this is going to be bad.
And, yeah, that was bad. That was bad.
They kind of
DeRozan was bad.
But they got hot. I mean, they got a play-in game. It's hard because it's been such a long time since they've been good.
So. Yeah, that is the roughest part about the Chicago Bulls. Is, I mean, I grew up in the 90s. I grew up in the 70s and then the 80s and the 90s. I got to experience the Chicago Bulls of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman and all those guys. And I remember those days. And even as a Knicks fan, it was kind of hard to root against Michael Jordan because as a Knicks fan, I'm just so downtrodden in general. But I was speaking of what's going on in basketball. The Knicks got the closest game to winning last night against the Celtics. They have not beaten the Celtics the last time I remember they won in Boston, I think it was a year or two ago. And so they played Boston. This was the first time they didn't get blown out. They lost by 2 points in overtime last night. And I was looking at how the playoffs, if the playoffs were today, the way they're seeded is the Knicks are number three, and they're most likely they're either going to play the Pistons or the Bucks, which is like I'm confident to a certain degree with both. The thing is, I started looking at the Bulls. If they're in the play-in tournament, they have even if they lose the play-in tournament, they still have one more shot.
Yeah, yeah.
it's almost like if you're in the play-in tournament, which if most of my listeners are like, what is he talking about? It's like a wild card spot. Like you can lose the first round of the wild card spot and possibly, you know, shoot the moon and get all the way to the end. So I feel very confident I would be more confident for the Bulls than the Knicks, because the Knicks are like one and you're out.
Right.
You lose that one series and you're out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I think, you know, the whole like Mavericks trading Luka was, you know, the craziest
madness
thing that happened this year. But then you look at the Mavericks and it's like, okay, they traded Luka, but if you go back, they didn't sign Jalen Brunson to a max, and Jalen Brunson goes to the Knicks and is just a baller.
Yeah.
He's the man. And he went to a high school down the street from where I grew up. So we used to watch him. He dropped like 40 points, you know, just casually.
Oh, yeah. He was a Chicago kid.
Yeah. Yeah. He went to Stevenson High School.
His dad was a Knick. Rick Brunson was a Knick. And now Rick Brunson is the assistant coach of the Knicks. So Jalen Brunson gets to hang out with his dad every game, which is, I don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, I guess they get along pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
For how did you get into like sports?
Yeah, I never played organized sports as a kid. I like tried ice hockey, but I got in too late, and everyone had friends, and I felt like an outsider, so I quit.
Dude, you're so tall. You'd be such a if you were good at ice hockey, you'd be a giant problem.
We played so much pond hockey as kids, like roller hockey in the front yard. Like I had goalie pads, I had all the gear, and we would go hard. But I couldn't stop on my left skate, which was like super hard, and the coaches weren't really helpful. They're like, you just got to do it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay,
that's
no
coaches.
This is too hard. So I quit that. And I always liked basketball. Well, I liked football, but I didn't want to get hurt.
Right.
So I was like, oh, let me play some basketball. I was a lefty, or am a lefty. And, I developed a pretty good jump shot. And, so I played.
And you're
in
like 6'5", right?
6'3", but you know, with shoes right on, maybe.
Who's counting?
If I was listed, maybe I'd say 6'5", but the joke in the Tormek office actually is that, no, it's not a joke. It's real. I would probably, if you put me on an NBA court, I would drop 12 points.
You think so? You really think so?
I would hit 4 threes on 10 attempts.
Oh my!
I'd go 4 for 10.
Are you kidding me? You think that? How many? I mean, based off how many minutes?
I'd have to play the whole game.
Oh
and
well, yeah.
I can't. You can't like put like, I don't know, like Patrick Beverley can't guard me. You have to like put someone small and not defensive
how
minded.
Great is Patrick Beverley? How do you listen to his podcast?
Yeah, he's a man. I hated him when he played, but man, he's cool.
Pat Bev, if you're not listening, if you're not following Pat Bev on Instagram, at least on Instagram, he is so cool, and he's got such a way with words.
He's such
a way with words. I used to dislike him intensely because, you know, he was on the Bucks, and when he was on the Bucks, he was like a problem with the Knicks. I think that was his last American team before he went to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember I hated the Bucks because I just didn't like Giannis, and I just disliked the Bucks intensely. And I remember Pat Bev on there, and Pat Bev was a problem. So I just remember, but then now he's on this Barstool podcast, and he's fantastic. He's just like, he's got such an incredible way with words, and he's so cool, and he's just like original. Like he's got these original thoughts. I think he's just fantastic.
Yeah, super intelligent. But I just, when he was playing,
you think Pat Bev's going to give you problems.
God, he would get, oh my goodness. And, you know, give me like a, I don't know, if there's anyone who's like James Harden level defense, but not as skilled and maybe shorter, I could probably score on someone.
Wow. Look at you.
If you sag off me, I could hit an open shot. But,
well, that's the thing is if there is a basketball hoop at Tormek, and I think you tore some people up.
Oh, I was, yeah. Well, Well, I'm glad there's no footage of that because
yeah, I didn't have any. The one thing about Carl is he's always well dressed. His hair always looks great. His shirt's tucked in. He looks like $1 million. He's a big guy, and there was no sweat. Your shirt didn't come out from the untuck. You look like you were like James Bond playing basketball, and you were playing for a while.
I'm just a chill guy, you know?
Yeah, just a chill guy. Just chill Carl. I have to tell you that one of the reasons why I got into organized being a sports fan later in life. Growing up in New York City, my parents used to take me to Yankee Stadium. My dad was born in the Bronx, and we went to Yankees. I remember I remember being in Yankee Stadium when I was like under five. Like I remember like being in Yankee Stadium under five, every so often we go to a Yankee game and there was just something about it. Like being a Yankee fan was like something. And then when I got to high school and I was so far, you know, crazy, girl crazy that I really wasn't doing anything other than that. And then got to college, you weren't watching anything in college. You were just, you know, we were in the middle of Ohio. We weren't just watching sports on TV. There's just, after going to 12 years at an all boys school and I'm going to a co-ed college in the middle of nowhere where there's nothing to do, I'm certainly not going to watch sports. You know, I never even turned a TV. I never sat in front of a TV for 4 years. Get back to New York. My girlfriend at the time was my wife now. We moved to New York, and then we'd gone to a couple of Yankee games with some friends. You know, Yankee tickets come up and stuff like that. We were also part of, you know, we were also part of the dynasty time, you know, 96 through 2000-something. So we had Derek Jeter's my age, and we just, like, everything about Derek Jeter and that Yankee team was, like, it was hard not to get fired up about it. But what really turned me, what made me a diehard New York sports fan was 9/11. So we were in New York City in 9/11. I told this story a million times, and I know I'm driving everybody crazy, but I was working in a restaurant. My wife was a nursing student at Mount Sinai, and I decided to drive her to work. And we got onto the BQE, which is leads from Brooklyn to the Brooklyn Queens Expressway, and we saw the second plane hit the Twin Towers. And you can go back in the archives, you want to hear the whole story, it's crazy. New York, there was no words to describe how it was, and we just didn't know if we were going to get back to normal, and what is going to be normal, and this is insane, and we saw it in real life, and we saw the devastation of people and all that. The thing that got New Yorkers back was when they, you know, obviously they delayed, you know, we're talking September, so we're getting close to playoff season, you know, in Major League Baseball. When the Yankees played in the playoffs and they came the first game back after 9/11, George Bush threw out the first pitch. Every television was watching this, and it was like, I get goosebumps talking about this. It made us feel as though everything's going to be okay. Being at New York City in 9/11 and seeing the Twin Towers and seeing the devastation and not knowing what's going on and smelling for months. We smelled Hillary and I make gallows humor jokes about the fact that we could smell the 9/11 ground zero for months. And I hope that doesn't turn into something, but watching the Yankees was this incredible balm that, and I say balm, B-A-L-M, please, ladies and gentlemen, I'm trying to make it, it's not B-O-M-B, B-A-L-M, B-A-L-M, ladies and germs, it was a balm. And it was like, ever since then, I've been such a rabid New York sports fan because I feel like there's been some traumatic situation where it's all going to be okay.
Yeah, I was young. I was five or six when that happened. So wow. I've seen the first pitch and I've seen clips of it, and I cannot even imagine the amount of energy that brought.
Oh, it was like, it was insane. And then there are funny stories. Like there are funny stories of George W. Bush getting nervous. He used to own the Texas Rangers, so he'd thrown out a first few pitches, and they're getting ready. And apparently he was like head to toe. I've been listening to some of the Yankee broadcasters. I love Yankee broadcasters, and like today I'm going to drive to Brooklyn and I get to listen to Yankee game and listen to the broadcasters. And they recount that day a lot. when there's like, you know, something not happening or something weird, usually in September they recount the stories all the time, especially on 9/11, they'll always recap all the stories. And George Bush had like head to toe Kevlar. Like nobody realized that he was like head to toe under his, you know, khakis and his jacket. He was a head to toe. And he was getting ready to throw out the first pitch. He was not, you know, he had thrown out a pile of the first pitches. And then Derek Jeter says to him, "Whatever you do, don't bounce it." And he looks at George Bush and he goes, "Because the fan, if you bounce it, you got to get over the plate. Otherwise, they're going to boo you." Because that's what happens. Like if you get the first, if you're standing on the rubber and you don't get it over the first pitch, they usually boo you. And Bush said that I've never been so nervous in my life. He went out there, the whole audience, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, it was like people were cheering because he's going out there. He throws at the first pitch and he throws right over the plate. But it was this amazing story, but it was really like that really ignited my fandom because I didn't really think about the problems in the world. I didn't really think about right or wrong. I didn't think about anything. All I wanted to do was enjoy this game. And that's how the Knicks have been for me. And this year... Last year, it was like this incredible spark of maybe. And this year, we're never going to get past the first round of the playoffs, Carl. We're going to get, and here's the crazy part. Back to, I was serious for a second, I'm going to be funny. Mike Malone was fired from the Denver Nuggets yesterday. Ooh. A championship coach of a championship team. The Nuggets won the finals, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
They fired him, and within 10 minutes, listening to sports radio, all these sons of these disloyal New York Knicks fans says, "Hey, listen, if the Knicks don't get past the first round of the playoffs, Mike Malone's looking for a job. They're going to fire Tibbs, and they're already pushing for the Mike Malone to be the new coach of the Knicks."
Oh, that's tough. I'm a huge Tibbs fan. You know, had Derek, well.
Oh, yeah, Derek Rose in the Bulls.
It's hard to say because he's known to, like, overplay his players. And it's like, was he the reason Derek Rose got injured? Like, did Derek Rose have to be on the court? So, but I loved his passion. I mean, and then he went to the Timberwolves, kind of turned that right around a little bit. I mean,
yep.
Great coach.
He played with Carl Anthony Towns at the Timberwolves.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have a Billy Donovan, and it's just not, you know, I was excited. I'm also a Thunder fan, so it's kind of like, it's cool to see that him come over and then just, oh, we're going to draft young, athletic, shooting guards. And he goes out and signs Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Crazy. Who do you think is going to be in the finals?
It's East is just so weird.
Is it really? He's like two. It's going to be the Cavaliers or the Celtics.
I'll never say the Pistons will be in the finals, but they're kind of hot.
How great of a story is that?
They have 14 wins last year.
it was considered one of the worst franchise records of losing in NBA, and they came back, and this year it's a completely different team.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see. And I went to school in Michigan, so I have a lot of Pistons fan friends. So it's kind of fun. I'll root for them. I'll root for the Lions, like, even though I'm a huge Bears fan. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess safe bet, I would say Cavaliers, Thunder, but
yeah.
Because the Thunder now they have, because Chet is so skinny, but they finally got a big man that can actually like defend the rim. He had that crazy block last night.
Don't talk about my man Isaiah Hartenstein was a born and bred Knick.
He's the
know
man.
That right?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know he was on the Knicks. No,
he was drafted from the. He played in Germany. And then when he came to New York, when he came to the NBA, he was drafted by the Knicks. So in last year, he was so dominant, and he was on the bench for Mitch Robinson, and he was in during the playoffs. So Mitch Robinson, great Knick, always gets hurt, especially towards the end. And Hartenstein played all year, and he was so dominant, incredible defender. Incredible playmaker. He was everything you want as a Tibbs defense first you know, team. I hate to say this, but he's everything that Cat isn't. You know, Cat, mm-hmm. I love Cat. I'm glad Cat is on Karl Anthony Towns is a Nick. But when he throws a three, it drives me crazy because we need more rebounds, and it drives me up the wall when he throws a brick. It drives me up the wall because we need more second opportunities, and I'm hoping and that's what Hardenstein does. He gives you second opportunities because he's always in the paint.
Yeah. Well, and it's so funny because they talk about like how everything changed, and it's, you know, they play the small ball and you don't need a big man. And then you look like Jokic. It's like, okay, this guy's dropping 60 points and he's the biggest guy on the floor. I think it's still important.
It's so important. I mean, the three game is amazing. I love, you know, people say NBA is ruined by the 3-point shot. I love it because it's just so amazing. I hate to say this, but Jason Tatum last night was throwing it from the label. He was throwing it from the logo, and it was just like, and it was effortless, and there wasn't a question. He wasn't throwing any bricks, and it was just like he was just throwing daggers. And I was like, I hate you, Jason Tatum. But he's that three ball is so effective, and it's just so amazing. But it's like I love the New York Knicks. I love the whole thing about it. I feel as though they lost a little bit of when they traded for Karl Anthony Towns and they lost Dante DiVincenzo. I don't worry so much about my main man Julius Randle, but you lost a little bit of the teeth, and then losing Dante and Isaiah Hartenstein was a giant loss, and it makes me feel as though that the Knicks will not get past the first. We'll get past the first round, but that's it.
Oh man,
they're not gonna. If they can't beat the Cavs, they can't beat the Celtics, and on the West, they can't beat the Warriors, they can't beat the Lakers, they can't beat the Thunder. It's just like, you know, they're gonna be relegated to the second round.
Yeah, well, and the Warriors are gonna be so interesting to watch. I mean, they kind of got hot with Jimmy Butler and.
Love Jimmy Butler.
But, I mean, their standings, it's insane. You saw it was, like, from, like, the 4 seed to, like, the 8 or 9 seed, they're all, like, the same record. I mean, the West is really the wild, wild West right now.
The West is unbelievable. The trades from this year with the Lakers and the Warriors have been wild. Totally wild. Luka and the Luka and LeBron team is unbelievable. But I really think that Jimmy Butler... Playoff Jimmy Buckets might be the game changer for the Warriors to kind of really make a deep run into the playoffs.
Yeah,
it's so exciting. I don't know why people say that the NBA is no good. I'm excited.
I think
I'm honestly, depressed, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's all it's mid season because I watch ice hockey too, and it's like mid season. Well, Blackhawks are terrible, so I can't even watch them right now, but. Mid-season, you get that lull of like, you know, okay, it's kind of boring. Like, but then once playoffs hit, everyone comes right back and they go, "Did you see that game last night? That was crazy."
Playoff basketball is definitely special. It's a different attitude. It's kind of like why regular season MLB is fun is because when they're playing in series, like you one game is one thing, but being able to say the Yankees are getting smacked by the Tigers right now. They lost two games in a row. And now they all say is, can they avoid the sweep? And it's like, that makes it far more interesting. And in basketball, they can't play back-to-back because it's too physically demanding. But baseball is amazing because they can play. I mean, they play so many goddamn games, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm a Cubs guy, and they just, you know, played the undefeated Padres and beat them 2 out of 3, handed them their first 2 losses of the season. Pretty awesome.
Can I just tell you one thing about the Cubs that I thought, you know, the Yankees did not re-sign Anthony Rizzo, who I loved. Anthony Rizzo is one of my favorite Yankees of this generation, and I think that I have a Rizzo shirt. I love Rizzo. I love his attitude. I love his leadership abilities. I mean, look, he's getting older, and I understand. The Cubs should have picked him up for just this year.
There was rumors
about
it.
Chicago, when they last year when they played at Wrigley, there were standing ovations. Every time Anthony Rizzo came up to bat as a Yankee, it was as if, you know, it was as if, I'd like to say, a religious figure showed up. Let's just say the Buddha. Let's just say the Buddha showed up. Let's say the Dalai Lama showed up before he started touching people's tongues. Never mind. Let's not talk about that either. But, I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, I feel like I don't know why Wrigley, the Cubs didn't just pick him up for a year.
I know. I wanted them to so bad, and I saw some articles and, I don't know, you know, rumors and things. But that whole Cubs team, well, Javier Baez is, like, atrocious now. But, you know, the Chris Bryant, like, it was just like they all kind of – they fizzled out. They left the Cubs, and then you just don't really hear much about them. And then – but I don't know. Rizzo was that guy. He was just like, you know, like, okay, if I'm going to go out and grab a coffee with somebody, like, he's probably number one on the list of anyone on planet Earth.
Yeah, Rizzo – I mean, if it wasn't for Rizzo, the Yankees wouldn't have Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge would be a giant.
Oh, and Aaron Judge – oh, my goodness. He is so fun to watch. That guy is crazy.
What do you think about the last question? What do you think about the torpedo bats? All right, so to set up the listener who's just like, look, I don't know anything about sports. A lot of baseball players, especially the Yankees, have been using this different style bat that has less mass at the tip and more mass a little bit back, where a lot of people hit the ball. What do you think? You think it's think it's cheating or no?
I think it's kind of like the whole steroids thing is like if you.
Oh, really?
It's like if, you know, people are still using them. It's like.
Think it's like steroids?
Well, no, not like that level. The principle of it. It's like, okay, it should be a standard. Like if people are using it, everyone should be able to.
But everyone's got different size bats. Like they're different. It's not one standard bat weight. Like all bats are different.
And I feel like it should just be standardized. I don't know. Is that crazy? Am I crazy?
No, it's not crazy. You're right. But it would be like, it would change the complexion of the batter. You'd never have a little guy. If everything was big, you'd either have no home runs or you wouldn't have any little guys like Anthony Rizzo. You'd have like you'd have the biggest shortstop on the planet.
All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, think about like football. Can Tom Brady deflate his footballs, or can everybody deflate them?
Oh, look at you now! You're taking a real stand. I like this. I like sports talk, Carl Friends.
Yeah, even playing field. You know, and I am not saying everyone should be on steroids. I'm saying,
yeah, there are some people who do believe that.
I don't. But
I did a April Fool's joke that was I got so many people, it was insane. I basically did, it was so topical that I drew up one of my knives, but in the style of the torpedo bat. And I said, my newest collaborations with the New York Yankees, I'm making the torpedo knife. And I put it on April 1st, and nobody listens to, nobody knows anything about sports, but everyone believed me. Everyone believed it. I buy that bat. And knife makers are like, "That's awesome! That's awesome!" I'm just like, "You don't even know what you're not a knife maker. How do you know this thing looks like a real knife? Get out of here!"
It would be kind of cool on a knife, though. I feel like the handling would be.
I might have to make one just because I'm getting so many people. So you really should try to make one. I'm like,
but then you might be giving some chefs some unfair advantages amongst everyone else.
There you go. Unfair advantages. Last thing. Give me your prediction. Who's in the NBA playoffs, and who takes the whole thing?
I'm just rooting for the Thunder, so I'm taking the Thunder, winning it all. I'm gonna go Thunder Celtics, and then the Thunder beat them in six games.
Wow, you think this? I love it. I was gonna say I really think that this is Donovan Mitchell's year.
Ooh,
I think
yes.
The Cavaliers. I mean, they've only had 16 losses this season so far. I mean, they are so dominant. When they played the Knicks had them the first half, and then Donovan Mitchell woke up, and it was like they shattered them. They went from being up by 13 to lose by like 25. It was like. Daunting. I think that this is Donovan Mitchell's year. I like Spida. I think I put him in the same boat as Jason Tatum. I hate both of them when they play the Knicks, but I can't say anything bad about them. I think that I got a feeling like the Celtics are kind of not feeling so hot, even though Porzingis was unbelievable last night. I think that something's up with Jaylen Brown. I think that something's up with him. He didn't play the second half last night. He had a shoe off. I think something up with him. And I really feel as though the Celtics bench is unbelievable. That was another reason why they won. I think it's going to be the Thunder, and it's going to be Cleveland. And I think the Cavaliers. I think this is Donovan Mitchell's year. I think Donovan Mitchell takes them all the way. What are we going to do? We're going to do Cavs in six. Cavs in seven. I'm going to say Cavs in seven because Isaac Hartenstein's my guy.
Yeah, there you go. You got to give him his respect.
If you don't, it's just so obnoxious. It's like, what do I know? But with that said, Carl Friends, you are my guy. Anytime you want to talk sports or anything else, I'm glad to know you. I'm very grateful for the customer service that you guys at Tormek provide. I'm grateful for the friendship I've made with all you guys. I think Sebastian is going to be at Blade Show. I know you guys are going to be at Blade Show. I don't know if you're going to be at Blade Show.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys. If you're at Blade Show, you got to go over to Tormek. Go say hi to my big friend, Carl. You're going to get that toxic friendliness. At Blade Show, I will definitely see you there. I'm going to be down there. I'm going to be down there for just a Saturday, but I'm definitely going to stop by and hang out. And as always, it's always great to talk to you. And thank you for everything.
Jeff, you are the man. I cannot wait to come up and visit you one of these days.
Let's do it. Anytime. You're always welcome.
Awesome.
Guys, we will see you next week. Thanks again, Carl.
Thanks, Jeff.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.